This is The Agenda. Local newsmakers, community leaders, and people in our valley making a difference. Here's your host, Dave Bernstein.
Hey, thanks for joining us. And on The Agenda, live from Olympia today, we have 12th District State Senator Brad Hawkins joining us. We want to get some updates, a little more detail on some of the action in Olympia. And Senator Hawkins, thanks for joining us.
Yes, thanks so much for having me, Dave. Good afternoon to you and the KPQ listeners.
You bet. I know you've got some floor votes that come up at 2 o'clock, so a little window opened up. So let's get right to it. First off, something that's been in the works here, a lot of discussions still yet to come, but the Senate Bill 5001, which would create an opportunity for another public facilities district, essentially, has passed in the Senate. And what was the vote on that, and what are the prospects in the House to craft this legislation?
Well, I'm proud to share, Dave, that it was unanimous, but it wasn't necessarily easy. No bill is. This particular bill to allow our region to form a second public facilities district, if that's what all the local governments, you know, like Chelan County, Douglas County, Wenatchee, East Wenatchee, if that's what they want to do. The bill passed through successfully three different committees and then unanimously off the Senate floor. But I had amendments and adjustments to the bill each step of the way to perfect it. Now it goes to the House of Representatives. It's been referred to the local government committee. And the stakeholders are growing. We have a lot of the counties and cities and things in support of it, but also most recently the chamber, the Confluence Health, and others. So I'm really excited at how it's kind of continues to pick up momentum. And ultimately, we're just trying to give our local governments an additional option here, if that's what they choose to do. And then ultimately, in terms of funding any facility, if that is what is decided upon, that will ultimately be up to our local voters. So what I do like about the bill is that there is a lot of local control and local flexibility built into it.
And so I know that there was another lawmaker in another part of the state, a member serves in the Olympia area, that would like to do something as well. So there's other areas of the state that have a similar interest?
Yeah, they do. And I've actually crafted this bill pretty narrowly. So it is an additional authority for a public facility district. The overall law related to this section of PFDs is counties with fewer than 1 million residents, and then they have to have had an existing PFD already. So really, it's somewhat designed for the greater Wenatchee area and the greater Olympia area. Olympia wants to do a regional aquatic center as well for their community. They don't even have a pool. The Wenatchee City Pool was built in 1965 and is in its final years, but the city of Olympia, Tumwater, Lacey, they have nothing related to a public facility in that regard. So I'm really working the bipartisan angle. We have a lot of support, not just kind of from our community for this option, but also for the option from the Olympia area. And we will be working that bill. I've co-sponsored the bill with Senator Sam Hunt from Olympia. He's been helpful every step of the way. And now as we move to the House, we'll be partnering with the Olympia-based House members as well.
We're talking to State Senator Brad Hawkins about some recent developments over in Olympia. I know there was a late night vote. I think it was Thursday night. Senate Bill 5536, another attempt to deal with this Blake decision that is described as a beefed up. I think that's the story that I put up on the website. A beefed up attempt. I know Senator Short in the 7th District was probably a no vote. You were a yes vote. I think you described it as more of a step in the right direction, but not everything that you'd hoped for. Give us a little more on your thoughts.
Well, this is probably the most significant piece of legislation that will be approved this legislative session. If the legislature is also able to achieve a compromise related to police pursuits, that will probably be the second most significant bill. But this bill was approved by the Senate. It, as you may recall, the state Supreme Court issued its Blake decision related to drug possession back in 2021. the case had to do with a woman who had drugs in her pants but said she didn't knowingly possess the drugs because the pants were borrowed from a friend or roommate. And so that state Supreme Court decision struck down Washington's felony drug possession law. The legislature was scrambling at the time to implement a short-term temporary fix to that law, which we put in place, but that law expires in July of 2023. So in just a few months, that will no longer be in effect. So we really needed to put together something that was more of a replacement legislation. And this particular one, while it doesn't go as far as I would have liked, I do believe it strikes an appropriate balance between having a helping hand of compassion and a heavier hand of accountability. So in this law, in the bill that passed the Senate, I believe the vote was 28 or 29 to 20, 21, something along those lines. We had liberal Democratic members voting against it because it is too harsh. And then we had more conservative Republicans voting against it because they felt it wasn't going far enough. And I don't disagree, but like I said, it does represent a compromise. So in any of those situations, it's interesting because a lot of people are unhappy. It doesn't get to everything. But basically, the underlying bill that passed the Senate does beef up the punishments, but also allows for pre-trial diversion steps. So ultimately, what we want is people to get the help that they need. And so giving them the option to defer their charges or ultimately dismiss their charges if they successfully complete a program and get healthy, then that can be a good thing. But ultimately, if people are unsuccessful completing the various diversional steps that are set up, then the prosecutors can move forward with prosecution and sentencing and ultimately jail time. Some of my legislative colleagues have characterized the drug issue as a personal health care issue. And while I don't necessarily disagree with that, people's drug problems, even if they're just, it's their own drug issue, it does have the effect of compromising them and potentially putting others at risk. And so ultimately, I do believe we do need to retain some options in our criminal justice system for drug possession.
It's described as beefing up the kind of the placeholder law that we have in place now. How does it do that? How does it compel someone to go into some of these diversionary programs? Because as I understand right now, first two times that they're found with some of these hard drugs in place, there is no jail time. Only upon a third time. So how does it give the legal system a little bit more leverage over these individuals?
Well, not only does it provide some leverage, it also provides some resources. About $50 million of resources are provided in this bill to help people get the treatment they need. Some people have argued, well, if you don't want people in jail and you don't want them recommitting these offenses, then we need to make sure they have the substance abuse treatment that they need. So that's one aspect of the bill. But also the short-term fix that was approved back in 2021 made drug possession a simple misdemeanor. And this Senate Bill 5536, the Blake decision replacement bill, does step that up. So for example, if someone has a controlled substance, a hard drug like cocaine, methamphetamine, it's a gross misdemeanor. So it's not necessarily a felony, but it's sort of an in-between step. And then ultimately, embedded in this bill is that the prosecutors have more flexibility and more options to get people into recommended treatment, to defer them and defer their prosecution. But ultimately, if people don't choose the treatment or aren't committed to completing the treatment, then they are going to go to jail, ultimately in some of these things. And the problem with jail for drug possession is if they're not distributing the drugs and they're just using the drugs themselves, then jail time doesn't necessarily, it may get someone clean, but doesn't necessarily solve the issue. And once they get out of jail, then they begin their drug use again. So what we really need to do is figure out a way and a bipartisan solution to getting people the help that they desperately need so that they're no longer a threat to themselves or a threat to others. But also, if people do commit other crimes while possessing drugs, then all those other state statutes still apply. So obviously, if someone has drugs and an illegal weapon, well, they're going to get the book thrown at them. But this has to do simply with individualized drug possession.
Let's talk about education here for a little bit and inclusive educational standards. There was a bill that I know that we've talked about and heard from you that you had opposed, but it did pass, and that would be a mandatory inclusive educational curriculum. You wanted to make it optional for a school district, but this bill has moved out of the Senate, and it will be a requirement, I understand.
Yes, it did move out of the Senate, and yes, I did want to make it optional. There has been a trend lately in Olympia where the Washington State Legislature is trying to become the Washington State School Board. And this happened a few years ago with comprehensive sex education. It happens incrementally with other pieces of legislation. This is a more significant piece of legislation, Senate Bill 5462, which would require all school districts in the state to adopt inclusive learning standards and inclusive curriculum, to have inclusive curriculum coordinators in place at our various regional educational service districts. The bill would also require the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction to develop these inclusive learning standards. And inclusive includes all the way down to transgender and some of the other controversial things. And then we don't know exactly what they're going to produce, I can imagine. But then school districts a year from now, or whenever this law ultimately goes into effect after OSPI has developed the inclusive standards, will be required to adopt them. So again, you have Olympia passing laws running roughshod over our locally elected school boards. And this is something that I do believe parents will be very concerned about, because it's another example of Olympia-based mandates related to the integration of certain things in curriculum. And the whole school system in our state has been predicated for years on local control. You have an appointed superintendent, locally elected school board members, they're in place to make decisions on what they deem to be in the best interest of their communities. And now you have, another way of saying it, the Washington State Senate School Board passing all these bills that are one size fits all and a mandate for adoption. And school districts will have no choice but to adopt them or else be in violation of the law. And I think that's problematic. Now, I don't necessarily disagree. If some school districts want to have inclusive learning standards and inclusive curriculum coordinators, they want to choose to prioritize their budgets and hire those people, that's fine. If local school boards want to, some of them want to adopt and move forward with that, I have no problem with that. The problem I have with this bill, as it passed the Senate, is that it forces this on every school district in the state of Washington and is an erosion of the local control that our school system is founded on.
Well, yeah, I think the point would be here is whether it's mandatory or optional. And leaving it to be optional, let's just take the Wenatchee School District, and I think a good example here, the vote would probably be 3-2. And those types of curricula would be adopted, but at least there would be discussion at the local level, and those items could be adopted, but at least there would be discussion. And instead, now there'd be no discussion if this law passes.
To take your example, maybe Wenatchee School Board, maybe they adopt it, maybe they don't. Or maybe now, because of the incoming future superintendent, the interim, Corey Kelleher, and all the other things they have going with their budget and challenges, maybe now is not the time for Wenatchee School District, even if they wanted to implement a bunch of new inclusive curriculum standards and integrate that into their curriculum. So maybe, even if they wanted to, maybe the timing wouldn't be right. So again, every school district is different. The state of Washington should respect that, and we should honor it. Instead, we have a continuing trend in Olympia of sort of top-down command and control sets of directives, and in particular, it's troubling when it's onto our school boards, because school districts, Dave, they're local government entities. They're not state entities, and I know that's confusing because so much talk is about state funding of education, but school districts receive their funding from federal dollars, some majority state dollars, but also local levy dollars, and it's their responsibility to kind of pool all their resources again and to develop their own priorities. So they're local government entities, much like cities and counties, and so I wouldn't want to prescribe certain things on cities and counties, much like I don't want to do on school boards. But obviously, good people disagree, and there's a variety of different thoughts and philosophies under this dome at the state capitol, and I just try to do the best job I can to represent our district in that regard.
And want to get your take on kind of along similar lines, and it's concerns that the parents have with their youngsters. And Senate Bill 5599 is a bill that proposes that if a youngster is seeking perhaps abortion services, perhaps transgender care, or if they were to end up going to a facility, and I don't think we have any in our immediate area, but we do certainly in Washington State, and that was the stated reason that they were there, that this this proposed law would forbid the parents of that youngster being notified of their presence there. I think there are some elements where law enforcement would be notified, so they if they got a report, hey, my youngster's missing. Outside of that, there is a concern that parents wouldn't be notified. Now, my question to you is, first, your thoughts on this, but secondly, I know that parents, when kids reach a certain age, aren't notified that their youngster is seeking an abortion service. But in this case, what are your concerns about what this Senate Bill 5599 means in the state of Washington and parents' notification?
I have big concerns. I voted against it, and we debated hotly against it for that very reason, about undercutting parents' rights. Now, this particular bill, Senate Bill 5599, had two aspects. So one was the children, and we're probably talking 12 to 17-year-olds, that would go to some of these facilities, either citing their interest in getting an abortion or, as you mentioned, the gender-affirming treatment, and basically future gender reassignment and hormone therapy and those sort of things. Now, under current state law, children can seek and receive an abortion without their parents' consent. So that really, I know a lot of people were troubled with that, but that is existing law right now, not really part of that. This bill doesn't make that anything different. But what this bill does is it brings in the gender-affirming reproductive treatment, and those gender assignment surgeries and hormone therapies and things. If a youngster comes into one of these facilities and sort of cites that, it's almost like they're seeking asylum, and then those facilities under this bill would not be obligated to notify the parents at all. They are required to notify law enforcement, but the parents could have real concerns thinking their child is missing. And then there's also the possibility for what this bill, if it passes and becomes law, what it could mean in terms of creating some sort of safe harbor situation in Washington State versus other states. Now, in our state, a lot of law enforcement entities communicate well with each other, but that's not necessarily the case from state to state to state. And there's 50 states. So if this law passes in Washington state, you could have this sort of potential safe harbor situation where from Idaho and other states, even as far back as Florida, could come to Washington state. No one would be required to notify their families. And then law enforcement potentially in those states wouldn't even know. And then, obviously, could you imagine as a parent if your child is, your 13-year-old is just gone and you have no idea where he or she is, and then you're never notified? I mean, that would just, as a parent of children that age, my wife and I would just be horrified. And so that's why I have concerns with the bill.
Yeah, we got about 1 minute left. So how would you respond to the situation, though, where a youngster is afraid of their parents knowing of their plans? And I think that's what proponents of this bill are trying to address, that concern.
Yeah, so I can understand and have compassion for that issue, but they're still 13, 14-year-olds. And there's a legal obligation with the parents for parental rights up until certain age. And so what I would support would be if those children come into a facility, perhaps there could be a 48 or 72-hour time frame so that no one is required to be notified at, you know, for a certain amount of time. But then those children would receive wraparound support services to help them, and then ultimately they would need to go back to their parents, because that's what is necessary. Now, again, when it comes to abortions, children are able to go right down. There could be children receiving abortion services right now. You're in one day, and maybe you're out the afternoon, and your parents don't even know. I mean, sometimes when I take my children to the pediatrician now asks me to step out of the room so they could talk with my teenage son. So things are interesting, but I do think children need services and we do need supports, but parents obviously need to be notified if their children are missing.
Well, Senator Hawkins, our time has grown short. I wish we had more time to talk. I know you've got to jump in 30 minutes and four votes. So again, real quickly, for folks who want to get in touch with your office, what's the best way to do that?
SenatorBradHawkins.org. Contact me through my website, and we'll work hard to get answers to your questions. And thanks so much for having me, Dave. It's always great to be with you.